That's me yodeling, okay? Because we're in Switzerland this week. Yodelorio. Hi again, everybody. Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you from the Matterhorn. Okay, I'm way up top there somewhere. I don't know if it's in Austria or Switzerland, but, you know, don't let facts get in the way. Welcome to another episode of Inside Curling. Thank you all for tuning in and listening. The audience is growing. We really appreciate it. As always, we're joined by our two pundits, World Curling Hall of Famer, Olympic gold medalist Kevin Martin, and the governor, the Padre, the Prime Minister of Curling, Warren Hansen. Before we recognize the sponsors, Warren, I want to get this right away. So yesterday, folks, we put up a little post on Facebook that Warren would be heading up the new Rules Committee for Curling Canada. And I want to know how many of you bit, okay? I want to know how many of you bit. Because I got to admit, Rod showed me the post. He said, look at the Facebook thing. You're not going to believe it. And I looked and went, oh, my God, are you kidding? Oh, okay. Okay, I get it. Okay. Think about that. Warren Hansen heading up the Rules Committee for Curling. Warren coming back to look after rules is the equivalent of John McEnroe coming back to tennis and looking after the Department of Etiquette. Okay, that would be the equivalent. April Fools, everybody. Warren ain't coming back to do the rules. Email us. Let us know if we trapped you. Thanks a lot to all our sponsors. Jackpot City, who brings you what's happening around the curling world. Coyote Tractor, the sponsor of Hot Rock Topics. And Goldline, who brings you In the House. Guest spot. Mike Harris is going to join us today. He's over there. He's looking after South Korea, Kev. You sure he's going to come on?
Yes. Mike's a good sport. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's a great sport. Yeah. They're struggling. What's happening around the curling world? The World Men's is on, of course, in Switzerland. Kevin's on the ground there. We'll get that. It's well underway. Canada's doing okay. The Canadian U21 completed in Fort McMurray, as well as the Canadian Wheelchair Championships was held in Moose Jaw. We'll get an update there. And also, World Curling announced the official induction of 5 new members to the World Curling Hall of Fame. We're going to take a look at that. Those announcements, Hot Rock Topics. We're going to look at an email, a couple if we have time. And they're hot again. The topics are hot. What are you hearing? This one is, did we get humbled, Warren? Did we get humbled from?
Well, sort of, Jim. Yeah. Not really. Just the fact of we're going to be a little more to the point here. What's going on?
Someone took on Warren. Not my fault. We've talked about a fair amount about the Scottish system selecting their rep for the world, and it's not the team that won the Scottish National Championship, me included, said, well, that's an outrage. Ian Karen from Scotland. Kev, he took us down.
Took you down a peg or two?
If he mentioned it once, Warren, I read there, pre-read the email. If he mentioned it once, he mentioned about 9 times. Get your crap together, you guys, before you know what you're talking about. Ooh, zinger. We'll read the bad ones. All right, here we go. My favorite segment, and yours too, In the House is brought to you by Goldline. Goldline Curling's Momentum shoes are unbelievably comfortable with a fast, reliable slider and a gripper that will keep you steady on the ice. Learn more at goldlinecurling.com. I didn't think this guy would show up, okay? I didn't think he'd show up. One of the great faces of curling in Canada is Mike Harris, who, of course, was in the final of the Olympics in 98 back in Nagano, and has, like I said, has been one of the faces of curling in Canada for a long time. And he's coaching South Korea. And most guys wouldn't come on, Kev, when you ask them, okay, with tough start. But he said, you know what? I'm going to answer the bell. I said I'd come on. Mike Harris joins us from Switzerland. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm good. I'm good. Really good, actually. Our record notwithstanding. I'm doing well.
You know, Kevin said the record isn't really indicative of some of the great shots that you guys are pulling off. He said it's not like they're complete collapses.
We've had our moments. We just played Returnaz, and we're laying 4 or 5 in the ninth, and at one point, and then we like hit and roll out, leave them a double. Like we're kind of missing the easy ones, and I've been going over this with the guys all week, and All right, we're trying to steal two coming home. We're trying to draw into lie three and miss the house. So we're making the hard shots and missing like really simple stuff. So the guys are playing okay. Tough field, obviously, and we beat ourselves in a couple of games. So, you know, if you're beating yourself, you can't be doing that at these events. That's for sure.
What do you do now, Mike, as a coach? You guys are, I guess it's 0-5. There are lots of curling left, right?
There is. The real goal coming in here was just to kind of win a couple of games and get some points for that Olympic qualification spot. You know, realistically, Kevin and I were talking about it earlier in the week. The top five teams here are so good. They're so much better than the others. I mean, hard to say that, you know, publicly, but here we are. And when you, but you know, go Bruce Maud and Returnas and Adine and Brad Gushue, of course, and the host country, Schwaller, they're very good as well. And, you know, it's just really tough to expect to make the playoffs. And at this point, you know, our pipe dream was to kind of go 6-6 and see if we couldn't sneak into that sixth playoff spot. But that's, right now, you know, it's trying to keep the guys motivated and is a challenge. This is unusual in that, you know, when Kevin and I are broadcasting and people tell us otherwise, Kevin, but I really don't care who wins. Really, it doesn't matter. So when you're here and you kind of have a vested interest in what's going on, it's I'm a competitive guy, as just about everyone that I know is here at this event. And I know our team is as well. So it's just tough to kind of keep them focused on the task at hand and trying to maintain some positivity. And that's sometimes easier said than done.
Yeah, you're not the first guy, Mike, a Canadian guy that we see sitting behind the rings as a coach with teams not from Canada. We're talking about Marcel Roch and there's, you know, many, many other guys who've done that. How did that all come together for you coaching South Korea and how do you manage it?
Well, it was just a last minute thing, really. I actually had no plans to be coaching at all this season. And I got a phone call in late August and they were going to be in Canada for the 3 months prior to Christmas. And they said, would you mind working with us? I've known a couple of the guys over the years, just, you know, from the circuit and whatnot. And a couple of players on the team had curled in a couple of slams before. So they called me and asked if I'd be interested to kind of, we had a 2.5 month contract before Christmas and they had a really good run at the Pan Continental where they lost the final. And then, I asked what's going on for the rest of the year. And they said, well, we're not there. They didn't actually play in anything at all, except for a local event in Korea in February. So they said, well, if you wouldn't mind coming to Switzerland for 3 weeks, we got here 2 weeks ago, today almost. So we had, you know, 10 days of practice before the event together, which was nice. And yeah, and then we're here for the week. So like I said, the goal for them, I think, coming in, pipe dream was to kind of go 6-6 and see if they could make the playoffs. But the real goal for the whole federation is actually to make it into the Olympics. And in order to do that, you need to win a few games here. And that's where we're at right now.
Right. Kevin?
Well, thanks for doing this, first of all.
Pleasure.
Yeah. I think, you know, our listeners would love to hear, when it comes to a world-class team, what's a day look like? What's it look like when the team gets up in the morning? How do you operate the business?
Well, these guys are they're early risers, so our 9 a.m. draw, they have a wake up call at 6 a.m. So they're up and at them. They want to make sure they're ready to go. The coach is not on the same program. I'm going to be clear about that right now. But the guys are up at 6. They're down for breakfast at our hotel for, you know, 6:30, 4 to 7, and then they like to leave for our 9 o'clock draw. We're leaving our hotel at 7:40, which is 2 minutes away from here. So we're here at the rink at 7:45, and then they've got a fairly extensive stretching and warm up routine. They have a physio that they bring with them. Our third's a little beat up, just shoulders and arms from the season of sleeping sort of thing. So our physio kind of just works with them with one of those, you know, the vibrator machine things, loosen up the muscles and whatnot. But they're definitely prepared to kind of go to the wall for the team. And today was our first day where we had a split. So we played the morning draw and had the afternoon off. So they got some rest this afternoon. And then, you know, it's late and we're back on for team practice here in about 10 minutes. So it's going to be a quick turnaround. We're trying to match rocks for our games tomorrow. So that's kind of the routine. I'm not sure which one of the guys are going to be throwing the rocks. We mixed our fifth player into the lineup today for both games. We switched out our lead and our second. But just, I was texting Kevin this morning when they were on air. It was just kind of to get some new energy on the team after losing their first three, and they had a rough day yesterday. But and they played a little better today. The morning game wasn't as good as the evening draw. Like I said, our game against Returnhouse tonight was fantastic. The guys had all kinds of chances. They kind of missed the easy ones after doing all the hard work to set ends up. They were, you know, they should be encouraged by the way they're playing, but wins are tough here. Like it's every team has got some talent. And so, yeah, their day is just conserving energy for the games. And then today was a particularly long day where we had that morning and then the afternoon off. And then we have an evening session. We have the same thing again tomorrow. So it's going to be more of the same tomorrow.
One thing I was wondering today when I was watching you guys, when it comes to calling a timeout, you've only got a short amount of time from the time the rock comes to a stop, and then there's a timeout called, but you're not the one that's been going out on the ice. It's your right. the other coach. So how do you, with the language barrier, deal with getting the message across as to, you know, within a few seconds? I was wondering that. I watched you very closely today, and it looks a little tricky. How do you manage it?
It's a little tricky, but our guys, although we have a translator for our team meetings, the other coach and our alternate, they all speak curling. So, you know what I mean? This year at this event, it's been great because the WCF has provided overhead cameras for the players' benches. So we actually have an overhead view on my iPad where we're able to see what's going on. So I'm literally pointing and shooting with the iPad before we go out and say, you know, play this tap back or play this run or whatever the call happens to be. So the guys are pretty good with that. The real benefit this week for me has been having our interpreter here for the post-game meetings. And we seem to be able to get a lot more accomplished than when I was on the road in Swift Current, Saskatchewan with the guys at a Bonspiel and not a translator to be found anywhere. That was a little bit more challenging than it's been this week. So, and I said, and the guys here are good. Like they are Skip and our alternate in particular are pretty decent with the language. They're, when it comes to curling, you know, you wouldn't want to have an in-depth conversation about politics or anything, but when we talk about different types of shots and whatnot, we're able to get that done.
Warren?
Thanks for joining us, Mike. Let's talk about Korea for a moment. I realize you've only been associated with them since last fall, but we look at the Korean men, the Korean women, and we've got two Korean women's teams for sure that are right up in the top rungs in the world, yet the men seem to be a little bit behind them. Is there a reason for that the men haven't advanced as quickly?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, Kevin would know that Minji Kim, who's been just a kind of a phenom out of Korea for the last few years, she's now playing third on that team, Gim. And how good were they at this Women's Worlds in Sydney? Fantastic team. And then the Garlic Girls, they have two really excellent teams who are working hard at the sport. Go back a few years, though. There was Changmin Kim, who Kevin and I were talking about that earlier. They actually lost the final of a Grand Slam right before Pyeongchang. So I'm not sure what it takes. I just think the gap at the top is so big now with the teams. And if you're not, they don't have, I don't know, like just a really good example of one of the teams kind of taking the reins and moving forward. So I don't know the exact answer, Warren, as to why you don't have the men's being as successful as the women's at the moment. Two of the guys on our team won the World Juniors, that test event year before the Pyeongchang. So there's some pedigree there, and they're used to kind of being successful internationally, but it just hasn't quite translated into the men's game. And I think part of it is the transition with the men's game is it takes a couple of years longer with the strategy and whatnot. And we talk about it a lot on the Grand Slam circuit where you occasionally will see young teams in the women's game come up and have some success. We got, you know, for the first time at our Players' Championship, we actually have a junior team has qualified at the Players next week from Switzerland, the World Junior Champions. Xenia Schwaller is going to be there. So I'm not sure what the right answer is there, but it certainly isn't from lack of effort and certainly isn't from lack of practice. It is a little bit from lack of any strategy, that's for sure. That's been there. So that's all I really work on. I don't talk to them at all about technical stuff. It's all strategic conversations that we've had. So I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Well, yeah, it does. It's certainly got to be different as well in a country like Korea where curling really isn't a mainstay sport. How do these young guys like that are involved with you, how do they get involved with the sport?
Well, they're kind of just grew up with a club around the corner, so to speak. So they're, you know, we've told the story before on air about CK Kim, who's he had a Canadian influenced one of his teachers had gone to Canada, and he decided that he wanted to try curling. And they said the mindset of just being able to go in there and working on the sport on your own was what got him some success. So even that little amount of success, and I think having the Olympics in Pyeongchang actually attracted quite a few more people to the event. And they're building new facilities all the time there. And it's just different than what we get exposed to at home, where it's kind of part of our culture. They almost have to kind of luck into it and know somebody who's been involved with the sport.
So you've coached in other countries. You've coached in Scotland, I think, in Switzerland.
Yeah, I have.
Well, let's talk about Scotland for a few minutes, because we're going to talk about this later in the show, because we got an email from someone who is a little upset that we didn't explain their selection process properly, I think, on our podcast, which we will later.
Okay.
So you worked in Scotland as a coach.
Yes.
In that process they have now of selecting the teams rather than the champion of the Scottish Nationals going. How does that whole system work from your firsthand experience with it, and what do you think of it all?
Well, all I can tell you is what I know from this year is that there was a big kerfuffle that Ross White, who won the Scottish Championship, didn't get selected to go. But my understanding is it was all in black and white. So they knew the highest ranked team in the world was going to be the team that was selected, regardless of who won the Scottish Championship. So Bruce Mallett winning that slam in January actually almost guaranteed him a spot at the world. So when I was there with coaching Tom Brewster and David Murdoch, and Kyle Smith ended up getting selected to the Olympics back then, if you recall. So there was a lot of controversy, and there was a clause in the selection process where, as the committee had last say, no matter what the deal was. So that part of it has been taken out of the equation. So now it was, in fact, in black and white that based on world rankings, this is who's going to the Worlds. So even though to the outside observer, Ross White ranked fourth in the world, wins the championship, Mallett was ranked third, I think, they knew that Bruce was going to be the team. So it seemed like a huge controversy from our end or from the outside observers, but in fact, the teams knew going into the championship. So I think if Bruce had not made the playoffs, it might have been a chance for Ross White to overtake him, but that's my understanding.
Okay.
Is that it was in black and white, and there really wasn't, no one was really surprised other than everyone observing from the outside was surprised, I think.
But. Yeah, we're going to go through their selection criteria that they have on their website later, and it certainly doesn't say that, but I guess it makes some sense that that's
I asked one of their coaches, Ross Patterson, who he works with the women's team. I asked him if there was any surprise. He goes, no, the players knew.
So I want to ask you another burning question about curling. We're hearing more and more controversy or suggestions about sweeping, and that there's some things going on that shouldn't be. From your observation and dealing with your team that you are at the World Men's Championship, what do you see as far as things not being done probably the way they should be by the rules?
Well, I mean, the game's always changing, right? So you got these, we just played Italy and Mozzano and Sebastiano Armand. You know, arguably the two strongest sweepers in the world on the same team, you had better learn to do what they're doing or you've been in for a long day. So I don't know if it's wrong or right, Warren. I mean, you go back to when they, you know, dropped corn brooms for rink rats, for push brooms, I see it as an evolving aspect of the sport. I don't see it as right or wrong. I just think that, you know, teams, whatever the rules are going to be, the teams are going to find the best way to be effective. And that's what we're seeing with, in particular, every team that's here. I'm not talking just the Italians. Every team that's here has at least one guy on the team who's an absolute beast of a sweeper, right? Like it's, you know, Colin Huffman right now is playing with Schuster, and he sweeps on the inside on both turns. Doesn't matter what it is. He's the guy that takes the rock, and he's playing a lot on Team Schuster. So every team that's here, if you want to be competitive, you really have to have that person on your team. And I don't see it as right or wrong. I just kind of see it as the game's evolving, and that's what we have to do next. So I think if I was to change anything or look at anything, foam density is a big issue right now. Chatting with Ryan Fry, who works with Team Italy, they discovered that the hard line foam has been getting firmer and firmer over the last couple of seasons, but I don't know to what extent the WCF is testing the foam density anymore, or if they are testing it. I know the fabric was a big issue years ago. So there's an ongoing testing cycle that needs to be pursued vigorously by the WCF and make sure that nothing untowards is happening. But you've just got bigger, stronger athletes playing now. That's what's happening. And back to the old days, Warren, back in the 70s, you found the two biggest guys with the biggest arms to swing those corn brooms. We're back there. We're back there again with find the two biggest guys you can. And you want, if you don't have the sweepers, you can't win. I think that's a fair statement. I don't think that's, it's just really tough.
So we're getting some indications that some people think that the knifing procedure is not clearing properly.
I don't see it. Everyone's doing it. So why? What's the big deal? Knifing, whether it's right or wrong or indifferent, A, how do you police it? Almost impossible. It's no different than guys in the old days picking up their broom.
Yep, that's right? Exactly.
Full of your hair, broom's full of snow, and you lift it up. And if you're, the guys police it themselves pretty much on the circuit. If you do it, we can do it. So I think there's a little bit of that goes on the circuit. And some of the teams that are up and coming on the World Curling Tour do it unknowingly, maybe is the best way to say it, and then thinking that's what you have to do to kind of be in the game. But really, the top teams are pretty respectful with each other, understanding that if you want to start dumping, we can start dumping. So I just think, for the most part, most of the teams are pretty respectful of it. And you just have to have that guy who can make the rock curl or to different degrees with keeping it straight, et cetera. So I just see it as an ongoing development as opposed to right or wrong. That's what I see.
That is the voice of Mike Harris. Great job, Mike. He is the coach for South Korea. He is the silver medalist from the Olympics in 1998. He is 0-5.
Yeah, I'm really happy I'm not getting paid per win.
Yeah, he is 0-5. However, there's something to cheer for. You said at the beginning, if you guys win two or three or four games.
Well, you're going to get into that Olympic pre-qualifying event. For us to get there directly is almost impossible. We want to get into that Olympic pre-qualifier. Of note, when we had the pre-qualifier in the Netherlands a few years ago, the women's program, in the women's, it was Eve Muirhead, Satsuki Fujisawa, and Team Korea who went to the Olympics out of the pre-qualifier. Two of the three of those gold and silver medalists. So just getting the opportunity to go to the Olympics, you can do anything you want through that event. So the fact that the guys are here is a huge, huge thing right now.
You got seven games left in the round robin. What's it look like? You got tough teams? You got a little balance of tough and not so tough, or what?
If you don't know who the easy game is, Jim, you're it. That's where we're at right now.
Okay.
So there are no easy games. Okay. So you gotta play well. If you play well, you got a chance.
That's fantastic. Thanks a lot, Mike. Good luck going forward, man. We'll be cheering for you. You are Canadian, right? And thanks for coming on.
Great talking to you.
Thanks, Mike. Good luck.
Thanks, Mike. See you tomorrow.
There he goes, Kev. There he goes. I bet that guy'd be fun to travel with, Kevin. I bet Harris is like a gas to hang out with.
He's a funny guy. Yeah, we will. Of course, we spend a ton of time together every year and have for, well, I guess 10 years now. So yeah, Mike and Kathy and Shauna and myself, the four of us are really good friends. So yeah, it's great for Mike to, I was really interested today, like watching how the language a barrier, how Mike deals with it. Mike's coached a lot of different teams, so he's very good at it. And he gets a lot out of his athletes, and they play well. He's just really, they've just really got to work on the strategic part. But otherwise, the Korean men, they throw the rock really well. They make a lot of shots.
Yeah, Mike. Well, he gave us an update on Team Korea, but shortly here, we'll give you an update on the whole event. Warren, what do you think? I love Mike Harris.
Oh, Mike's a very knowledgeable guy. He's got a lot of background experience. I think, got to remember that Mike's profession, he was a golf professional, so he's a born teacher. Mm-hmm. So that's got to play in big time into his work with all these different countries and different teams. So very knowledgeable guy about the sport, and converses very well.
Good luck the rest of the way, Mike. All right, Kevin. What's happening around the curling world means, oh, yeah, there's a big event over in Switzerland. You know, the men, that's what's happening. Of course, the men's world championships is on. Kev, give us an update.
Yeah, well, let's go through a little bit of the standings, you know, where things are at. We, as we sit here, the draws are all complete on Monday evening. So it's been wrapped up for Monday evening. You've got Sweden, some Dean guy, at undefeated at 5-0, not a big shock. But you've got Scotland at 4-1. That's Bruce Mowat. You've got Italy, Joel Retornaz. Well, that's no shock either. They're at 4-1. Canada at 3-1. So they haven't played as many games, but they're curling well. That's kind of your top group of five. And then you've got Germany playing really good. This is somebody I wanted to mention. I've seen them play before, but this young team, they are really good. And they're really well coached. Uli Kapp is coaching, a famous name, of course. So everybody kind of keep an eye on Germany. They have an outside chance of getting in the playoffs, I think. But they're getting better in a hurry. So that's the young team to watch at Germany going forward for podium finishes at Worlds and Olympics and so on going forward, in my opinion. The two teams that we want to watch for that sixth spot, I believe you've got USA and Norway. USA just lost a tough one just now, giving up a 3 in the 9th and a steal to the Netherlands and losing the game to drop to 3-2.
And they were up 3 playing the 9th, weren't they?
Yes, they're up 3 playing 9 and ended up losing. So that's a hard one to swallow. Norway as well. Ramsfell, not a great start. They're 2-3, but don't count them out. They're a really, really strong team. That's kind of where we sit right now. The field is sort of separating, as one would expect, with Canada, Sweden, Scotland, Italy. And then Switzerland had a kind of a shaky start, but they've got a little lighter group now. They started out with some really tough games. So you're going to see them march up the board into, I think they'll get to 5-2, 6-2 here shortly and be right in the thick of things.
We'll give you the last word, Warren, on the World Championships.
Yeah, I just maybe add a couple of things. I took a look at the percentages before the start of this draw, and as Kevin mentioned, Schwaller, Switzerland, they stumbled early. However, and I'm looking at the percentages per team, they're right up there at the top. They're tied with Canada at 88 each, and then Scotland 86, and Sweden at 86. And before this evening's draw, the USA Schuster, he was at 86. So those were the top shooting teams. So I think it's going to be quite a finish. Interesting, because Switzerland, who's now a little bit back behind the crowd there, if they keep shooting the way they are, they're certainly going to be around when things conclude, and we've certainly know how well some of these others are playing. Guy that's been kind of a sleeper here for the last little while this year is sitting at 5-0, that guy from Sweden, Edin. You can never count them out. And so I think it's going to end up being a wild weekend when we finally get the final six chosen.
All right, time for our picks. I'm all about the long shot. I'm going to go with Norway and Scotland.
Norway and Scotland.
I just waved over the top curlers in the world.
Well, I guess since you're going with Norway and Scotland, I've certainly got to go Canada, and I've got to also go Sweden.
You went with Guju Adin?
Yeah.
Are you sure? Are you sure about that one?
Well, what a gutsy call. For me, I've got to go Italy, of course. So that gives us 5. And here we are. I've got to decide on USA or Switzerland. Swiss has the crowd, and the crowd is fired up. They are extremely loud. I've got to go with Switzerland. Yep. The crowd will really drag them forward. But, you know, the U.S. has an excellent chance of getting in, but Swiss has a better chance. They've already played a few tough games. So that's my picks.
Yeah, and I think Jim's pick of Norway, they could be there.
Ramsfeld.
Schuster could be there. Schuster losing that game to the Netherlands, though, that's not a good sign. But I think we got 6 good ones there. So we've got Norway, Scotland, Canada, Sweden, Italy, and Switzerland are our 6 picks to make the playoffs.
You couldn't be more wrong about Schuster. He's got no chance. No chance.
Really? The Olympic gold medalist.
Well, wait till we get Schuster on here. He can deal with you.
Don't do that. Hey, editor, take all that out. That guy's supposed to be a guest. Take it out. There's our picks. So tune in during the week. We're going to do a couple update shows. Okay, Warren, the Canadian U21, Fort McMurray just wrapped up, as well as the Canadian wheelchair in Moose Jaw. Give us an update, Warren. What happened?
Okay, so the U21's over for another year, and here's how things stacked up in the end. Team Alberta number one, Keenan Wiffs, and Nova Scotia number one, Ally McNutt, were crowned the new Canadian U21 champions on Sunday. And the women's side, Nova Scotia one, comprised of skip Ally McNutt, third Maria Fitzgerald, second Allison Umla, lead Grace McCusker, and coach Teresa Breen capped off an undefeated 10-0 run in a round robin to finally down Ontario number one, Julia Markle of London, Ontario, 9-5 to win the gold. It was the second time in 3 years for Nova Scotia to win the women's title, so congratulations to them. In the women's bronze medal game, Alberta number two, Grace Boudreau, defeated Nova Scotia number two, Cassidy Blades, by a score of 7-3. In the men's side of things, Keenan Wiffs and his Calgary-based team of third, Kai McCauley, second, Michael Keenan, lead, Max Cinnamon, and coach Derek Bauer defeated Nova Scotia number one, Kaling McIsaac, 7-6 in the gold medal final. The win for Alberta marked the second time in a row that the province has won the U21 Junior. In a bronze medal game, Team Manitoba number two, Jace Freeman, needed an extra end to defeat Saskatchewan number two, Dylan Dirksen, 7-5. Over in Moose Jaw, the wheelchair championship completed. The host province were the winners, and that team won it again for the second time in a row. They defeated Newfoundland Labrador by a score of 7-6 in an extra end to win the crown. Skipping the champions was Gil Dash, third Marie Wright, second Moose Gibson, lead Cheryl Peterson, and coach Lorraine Arguin. The silver medalist team from Newfoundland Labrador was skipped by Doug Dean, and the bronze medalists from BC were skipped by Jerry Augsgarden. So congratulations to the winners in the juniors and the wheelchair.
Moose Gibson. I like Moose. That name.
Love the name.
Yeah, in Moose Jaw.
I saw a photo of Moose. He's a big boy.
Yeah. Yeah, I figured something like that. And by the way, Newfoundland Labrador, like they need another good curling team coming out of there.
Way to go. They got some depth going there.
Yeah, they sure do. Warren, you're still on. Five new inductions into the World Curling Hall of Fame.
Yes, it was announced by World Curling a couple of days ago that there's five new inductees, two athletes, one builder, and two in the athlete builder category. The athletes named were the late Thomas Alsrud from Norway and Canadian wheelchair curling athlete Sonia Godeau. And the builder side, a Canadian, Les Harrison. He was past president of the World Federation 2006 to 2010. And the two athlete builders in the wheelchair athlete side of things, J.L. Jungnell from Sweden and Paul Trollsen from Norway. So congratulations to the new inductees. The World Curling Hall of Fame is still relatively new. As I was checking, there's still roughly only about 80 people in the World Hall. It's about 12 years old. There's 28 Canadians, and I think it was started back in 2012. So interesting, Kevin, some names that we know pretty well in that list of new inductees.
Yeah, congratulations to all. Absolutely. And yeah, good to see Thomas Alsrud in there. Fantastic. Paul Trollsen as well, who beat us in the final in 02.
I know two World Curling Hall of Famers.
Who are they, Jim? Yeah.
It's no anybody, April Fools.
Anybody that we know?
Yeah, Warren Hansen, of course, Kevin Martin. You guys, why don't you submit my name for the builder category? I think I've done a lot for curling, Kev. Crickets.
Could be more if there was maybe a destroyer category.
It takes a couple years. Yeah.
A patch category, Warren. Come on, how about a patch category at the World Curling Hall of Fame?
Yes, we could put you up for that one without question. Go. You'd be in the running.
Congratulations to all the inductees. Super cool. You deserve it. That's what's happening around the curling world. Hot Rock Topics brought to you by Coyote Tractor. If you have work to do, Coyote has the tractors, the UTVs, the ZTRs, and compact construction equipment to do it. Coyote, we dig dirt. Here's our email from Dawson. Hey, boys, quick question. I think you might find this interesting. You mentioned on one of your previous shows that the World Men's Curling this year only has around four to five of the teams from the top 10 ranked teams in the world. And yet the Players' Championship, taking place in April after both the men and women's curling is done, will have all top 12 ranked men's and women's teams present and represented. Does this not feel like the Players' Championship is the true, quote-unquote, world championship event with all 12 men's and women's teams from the world rankings all being there and represented? They are even able to wear and showcase all their sponsors at this event as well. Interested to hear your thoughts. You guys go first.
Well, okay. Well, let's first of all say who the five are that are out of the top 10 in the world rankings. You've got Joel Retornaz, of course, number one. Number two ranked in the world is Bruce Mowat, who's there. Number three is Botcher. Number four is White. So those are not here. Yannick Schwaller, of course, is here. He's number five. Brad Guju, number six. And Nicholas Adin, number seven. So that's your five out of the top 14 that are actually here at the World Championships. So when it comes to the Players' Championship, that was sort of the thought behind it at the start. Now, it goes all the way back, I believe, the first Players' Championship was 19, was it 92 or 93, Warren? You're always one when it comes to dates.
I think 93.
We won the 94, beating Ed Wernick in the final. Yeah, and I 93, I think you're absolutely right. 93 was the first Players. But the whole idea of the Players' Championship has always been absolutely the best against the best. So the only way you get in, it does not matter where you're from, it's straight off rankings. So out of the top 12 teams, that's all that's getting in. Players is a smaller field than the other Grand Slams. The other Grand Slams are either 15 or 16, generally 16, but the Players is only 12. So you've got Italy, Scotland, Switzerland, Canada, Sweden, and I think that's it. You're going to get five nations will be represented at the Players' Championship. So it is a real task. Usually in most slams, there's usually seven or eight nations represented, but it really is a true world champion that comes out of the Players' Championship because it's the top 12 women's and men's teams, period. So that's why it's the toughest event to win as far as talent goes in the world. There's absolutely no question about that. The only other event that I would think is as hard or harder is the Olympics because of not necessarily the talent of the teams on the ice, but the pressure of having your nation on your back. When it comes to a world championship like we're here, you have the Canadian curling or Scottish curling, all the curlers, that weight on your back. But at the Olympics, you've got the entire nation. Anybody who watches sport at all pays attention to the Olympics. All sports. So it's a little bit different. But yes, the Players' Championship is a wicked event to win. It was always my favorite, other than the Olympics. Olympics were my favorite, but the Players' Championship was always my favorite event.
Yeah, Warren, this is totally interesting, Warren. Speaking of Players' Championship, when they do it in golf, it's called the fifth major now because every player in the world gets to go there, but not all the good players get to go to the Masters, you know, or the U.S. Open. You got to qualify. So what do you think of this, Warren?
Well, in sport at the international level, I guess it's sort of there's two things going on. There's world championships, which is country against country, but then there's World Cups. And the World Cup is the event that tends to more take the top athletes, no matter which country they're from, and have them play off for whatever title it is, whereas the world championships are more country against country. Although in some sports, particularly in like the sliding sports, some of the track and field entities, they do allow more than one entry from a country, depending on ranking, to participate at the world championship level. So it's kind of a different, it's a different concept. I mean, I even thought at one point in time the WCF could even change these world championships to maybe allow at least two teams for country if they're in the top 10 ranking. But as we sit today, the world championship, as we know it, is country against country. It's much like in our country where we have a Brier that's province against province. And can you again say, is that a true Canadian championship where you have to more or less restrict people by the province they come from to participate versus just being part of the country? So it's two different concepts. I'm hopeful at some point in time here, we will have a true World Cup in the sport of curling. It was attempted, I think, in 2019. The WCF had a sponsor, a Chinese company, and they came in, and I think they bit off too much in the first year, but they tried to run four events in four different parts of the world the same year, brand new events, and it just didn't come together. But I think it will resurface again, And it's, again, it's the world, the Grand Slam is truly a World Cup event. And right now it is pretty much the World Cup championship from my point of view.
What are you hearing? I've taken to task here. This is from Ian Karen from the Edinburgh, maybe the curling club. He's from Edinburgh. Anyway, boys, past couple of shows, we have talked. You have talked about the system in Scotland where the team representing Scotland at the World is selected. That's you saying that, Warren. Ian sent us a little follow-up. Over the past few weeks, you have made comment about Scottish representation at the Worlds and the Scottish Championship is not automatically selected. It is disappointing that you have not done sufficient research on this to understand that since 2022, a selection process has been in place and being Scottish champion is just one of many criteria that are considered. Your podcast continues to provide great insight into curling. However, you should not be making uninformed comments about the processes and procedures used by countries other than Canada. I recommend that you find and read the document created by British Curling that defines the selection process. Then you can perhaps supply us with a more informed opinion. This guy's starting to hurt my feelings, man. You have a significant listening audience in Scotland, so it would be good to hear a more informed opinion on events outside of Canada. All the best, says Ian. Ian's a tough Scotsman, man. Ian is a tough Scotsman. Let me summarize. Get your act together, fellas. That's from Ian. Warren, what do you say? This is the guy's right, Warren?
Well, in response to Ian, we've looked up the selection criteria, and I will review exactly what it is. So they have a panel, and I won't get into who's on the panel, but I believe it's about five people. And this is exactly what it says. The selection panel will convene to consider the following criteria when making the selection of any team. Number one, results and performances from the most recent relevant Scottish Championships. Number two, results and performance data from World Tour and international competitions. Number three, world ranking data and trends across the previous three seasons. Number four, results at any previous major championships. That's it's the World Championships, the Olympic Games, European, etc. that are considered to be significant. Number five, performance record against likely championship opponents. And number six, assessment against the key performance criteria of technical shot making and readiness to perform as a team at the international championships. So as we can see, it's got a lot to it. It's a lot of records and history they have to review as they are making these decisions. But it's pretty thorough. I don't think it's unlike a lot of sports. This is maybe foreign to the sport of curling. But I think if we look into Canada, most team sports that are going international, they select their participants probably through a similar process. Anyway, I think it's interesting. What's your thoughts on it, Kevin?
Well, does it say in that doc? No, I didn't know about this. This is the first I heard of it with Ian or with Jimmy talking about it. But I guess my first question would obviously be if those are the six criteria, what percentage goes to each one, or is this totally subjective? You know what I'm saying? Is that if you're talking about the Scottish Championship being one thing, okay, but then you've got tour and rankings and if how well you've done in the Worlds and Olympics, but they're the ones who actually choose the teams to go to that. So some teams might not have the opportunity to go to a Worlds and Olympics or Europeans because they haven't been chosen by this same panel. So that's kind of tricky. Opponents, you know what I mean? I'm just wondering if it's just sort of, if there's something mathematical to it, or is it just the panel choosing and actually just having these things as a review? You see, what I'm worried about is it becoming political and not sport related? That's always my concern when it comes to, like, we talked about this back a few years ago in Canada. Should Canadian teams be chosen by the powers that be? And, you know, that's when I was still curling, so I haven't played in 10 years. So, it was before that, but not much before that. And of course, that scared me right away. I'd much rather decide it on the ice than decide it in a boardroom of people making up that decision. So that really scares me. If there, but if it is a percentage, like if there's something real about it where the Scottish Championship is good for 18%. Your rankings are worth 12%, and it all adds up to 100%. So it's a math thing, not a choice over a cup of coffee. That's my worry here with what I hear.
But if you listen to the categories, they're pretty thorough, Kev. Like even if you're in the top two in any of those categories, you're doing great, from what I heard anyway.
Right. But in the case of the big discussion, of course, is Team White and Team Mowat, both fantastic teams. And during this year, Team White actually passed Team Mowat in the rankings. But Bruce has done fantastic lately at World Championships and Olympics. But Ross White might have, but he's never been allowed to go. So that's kind of my concern. Is that
right.
is it some way math, or is it a decision made by people deciding, no, I think this person's better than this person, but is there something tangible to it, or is it just sort of guessing? And that's always my worry with this type of thing.
I think you bring in a good point. I was involved in a process of this nature way back in 1987 when we first ran the Olympic trials for the demonstration in Calgary in 88. Half the teams participating in that were through a selection process. So where we ran camps, and they were graded on four different categories. I believe the percentage breakdown and the mark of 100, it was five different categories and weighted appropriately. So it was pretty much looked at, as your Kevin's suggestion, on based on performance. And was really no political entity brought into it. And I think that's a good point. I'm just looking through this procedure that he's outlined to me, and I really can't find anywhere where it says exactly what they consider, other than the criteria I banged off, when making their decision. So it's interesting, as Kevin says, is it all data-based, or is there some potential political influence comes into it, which is, of course, the danger that you don't want that to happen. To a very large degree as well, this is more or less British curling, which is involving the British Olympic Committee that's involved with this. And if you remember back in the United States after the 2014 Olympics, they actually engaged a similar process for about 4 years, whereby it wasn't necessarily the team that won the U.S. Nationals that would go to the Worlds. And that, on one occasion, for sure did happen. It may have happened twice, where the team that won simply didn't have the numbers that was felt to be necessary to represent the USA at the World. And I know the U.S. Olympic Committee was very involved in shaping that at that point in time as well. So, different approach to life. Interesting. And I think Scotland is proving that it's successful. They've been producing some pretty outstanding teams in both the men's and women's side at the World and Olympic level. And the interesting thing is the development end of things. And this is where it becomes interesting. I mean, I look at development in curling. Everybody says development, development, development. But development probably has three prongs to it. One is recruiting and getting people involved in the sport and keeping them involved. Two is getting people into a high-performance channel and moving them down the line if, in fact, they have the ability and a desire. And then the third category of promotion is the fan, who doesn't necessarily have to be a curler at all, but did you want to attract them to be interested in the sport? And I think sometimes we lump all three of these things into one package, which, again, makes it even more confusing. But that's what they do in Scotland. So, Ian, we have put it out there, and we'll see what responses we get to it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ian. Thank you very much. And but though, you know, just so Ian, when you listen to podcast, that's my concern, is that if it's a group of people in a room and kind of choosing, that scares me. But if it's math related, so that it's absolutely for sure how the team gets picked, that's great. But that's what I'm worried about.
Well, it doesn't take into account momentum. You go into the national championship, say you mop the floor with everybody. Yeah, sorry, you didn't meet those six criteria leading up to it. That's what happened, right? That's what happened with Ross White. Anyway, Ian, I think you're onto something, my friend. And we like to read anyone's email that takes on Warren. So you're
or Jim.
You bring it, Ian. You keep bringing it, baby. Drop us an email, insidecurling@gmail.com. We want to thank Rod Paulson and his company, who handles all our Facebook page. If you don't belong to it, sign up, man. Jump in there. Make some comments. We'll probably talk about them. Thank you again to Jackpot City, Coyote, and Goldline, who make Inside Curling possible each and every week. And thank you to you, the fan, the listener. We appreciate you tuning in each and every week. Kevin, are you going to bring us back some cheese and chocolate?
Well, I'm not sure about cheese, but I sure like the chocolate. I had one today.
Swiss, Kevin. Swiss cheese. Come on.
The current price of chocolate over here, it must be worth a gold brick in Switzerland.
I guess that's a no. By the way, we're going to do more shows, Warren. What's the schedule?
Well, the round robin ends on Friday evening, and of course, six teams will be qualified after that final draw. So we're going to give an update at that point in time, and then we will further eliminate four teams, I believe, on Saturday. So we're going to do an update on Saturday night.
Yeah, 13 teams, 12-game round robin. Oof. thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll talk to you in a few days with our special Inside the World Curling Championship. See you later, Warren. Go read that British curling thing again. See what's up.
Thanks, Jim.
See you, Kev.
Hey, thanks, Jimmy.